from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
All right, welcome to the Good Atheist podcast, episode number 2.
I'm Ryan Harkness from Bitelinker.com.
And I'm Jacob Fortas. So let's get it started right away. First of all, it's the 4th of July, so that means that it is a holiday for all of you Americans.
We had our holiday. Canada Day was just a few days ago, and let me tell you, it was wet.
Yeah, it wasn't very pleasant. It was really freezing cold. I was up in Quebec City, and it was about 12 degrees.
How did the Quebec City people celebrate?
It was pretty mute, actually.
For those of you that don't know, Quebec kind of hates the rest of Canada, which is why we have our own kind of national holiday the week before, even though we're not a nation, but we're not going to get into that.
No, that would be too political. Instead, let's talk about a bit of the politics happening in the U.S. right now. I don't know if you're aware of a guy called Keith Olbermann. Have you ever heard of him?
The name rings a bell. Is that the guy on MSNBC?
On MSNBC, yeah. He's the only interesting guy that I've heard on the news at all, actually.
Yeah, he's written some really, like, firebrand, like, kick-ass, no-nonsense stuff.
Well, I'm going to provide a link, and that link is for this one speech where he's calling for the impeachment of President Bush over the whole Scooter Libby thing. And that's what I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about. I know it's not necessarily related to religion, but it is...
It's related to morals, and morals really are related to religion. And
yeah, well, no, that's exactly it. And I mean, for starters... It's a fantastic dialogue, and essentially what he's saying is that one of the big reasons for the checks and balances in the U.S. is to avoid, I guess, what you could call cronyism, right? Where you have this one guy, and he's the president, and all of a sudden he decides that all of his little buddies are immune to whatever, and this is essentially what's happened, and of all the things that he's done, this just kind of displays his not only his arrogance, but his complete disregard for the justice system and the legal system in general.
I did find it to be the icing on the I don't care cake.
Oh, it's pretty good. I mean, usually it's funny because usually presidents wait till the last minute for pardons. I mean, that's what Clinton did. Before he left, he pardoned his brother. He pardoned a whole bunch of people. Yeah. He got in a lot of crap for it. Mm-hmm. And it actually kind of ruined a bit of his reputation at the end, but I mean...
Well, he was pardoning people just for doing campaign contributions. It's pretty whack. That's like a buy-your-way-out-of-jail card straight off the Monopoly board.
Yeah, seriously, I love that Monopoly option. Mm. Anyways, what do you think about the whole sort of cronyism? Do you think impeachment is essentially useless at this point?
I don't think it's going to happen. The issue here is that they already tried to impeach Clinton, and it was over something so ridiculously obtuse. And now they have a guy that they really should, but I just don't think they're going to do it simply for the fact that they did it so recently before. It would just make it seem like the system is really damaged.
The problem is, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think it would erode the confidence that people have, and it's hanging on a very fine thread, confidence in the office of the president. I mean, people are just so jaded. I mean, they don't believe in politics anymore. I mean, there's no longer any political muscle in the U.S., and it's kind of sad, actually, to watch the system being eroded like that. And that's kind of the reason that I wanted to talk a little bit about it. I mean, it's July 4th, and a lot of people are going to be out probably, you know, waving their flags and singing America and all this other kind of really patriotic stuff. But you know what? The article that I wrote recently, and it was comparing our patriotism here in Canada with the patriotism in the States. And what I thought is maybe on both of ours national holidays, we should kind of take the time to, instead of being, you know, only proud, we should kind of, I don't know, take the time to look at ourselves and look at what our countries have done. Look at them and really be, what is wrong with this picture? What is there to be happy and patriotic about, and what is there not to be? And right now, I think that they're finding themselves in the camp of the not a lot to be, and it's kind of sad, actually, to see that happen.
It's definitely unfortunate. There's so much going on that's really dragging the U.S.'s name down, and every day you see it in the newspapers where there's confrontations in the Middle East. There's confrontations now with Russia, which just to me, I mean, obviously, I think, did we touch on this on another show about how Russia is slowly sliding back into what seems to be kind of a isolated military kind of position?
I don't remember, but I do recall
something
like that.
We've discussed it before, but my big concern here is with this whole missile shield thing, it just seems like we're isolating more people and we're just throwing up more barriers. And to me, that seems to be the marching drum of America for the past few years is isolationism and, you know, my way or the highway, good versus evil with no shades of gray. And it's very, to me, it's very disturbing.
It's what's disturbing is actually kind of there's a global trend of like this neoconservatism, and we see it in the in France, and that's going to be a big problem too, because France wants to mimic a lot of what the United States is doing, despite the fact that their system, generally speaking, is a lot better in terms of healthcare, in terms of education. But you know, the rich powers that be aren't really happy necessarily shelling out all this loose change that they have in their pockets, and that's essentially what's bringing all of these neocons back in power. And the problem with Iraq and the problem with a lot of different, like the problem that had originally been happening in Russia right at the after the fall of the wall was because of this neoconservative attitude of saying, well, let's put in the install free markets and this is going to solve all the problems. And at the same time, most neocons are also, you know, really hardcore religious individuals that want an erosion of the separation of church and state. So they're combining a lot of scary kind of ideas, and it's kind of like anti-progressive. It's against much of the ideals of the Enlightenment, which is kind of the hallmark behind the whole Independence Day thing. I mean, the Founding Fathers were, you know, products of that period. The idea of the endless optimism in terms of freedom and in terms of the power of the people, and now it just seems
and
like everything's reversed.
Of church and state.
Particularly
that. I'll tell you what, it's not hard to be against the separation of church and state when the place you came from, you see people getting executed and beheaded and put in jail for religious persecution reasons. I mean back then there's a very good reason. It was a very obvious reason why you had to have separation. It was because if you didn't, you would have serious problems, and you would have lots of death and lots of wars and lots of everything else. And so it just makes sense to keep them separated. I think nowadays it's not so clear.
Well, you know, the one thing that they've forgotten, one of the reasons for it, is because there was a big separation between you know, like you have these theocratic oligarchies which exist with a very tight framework of individuals that are not really voted in, they just are appointed, and it's a very undemocratic affair. So I think the Founding Fathers understood that if those people that were allowed to command power weren't accountable, and really, who for instance is the Pope accountable to? I mean, nobody. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the big issue. But what's funny, and this is sort of like the rebirth of the neoconservative movement, is that corporations now function and exist very much like churches and religion because of their structure. We tend to believe that they are the product of individualism, right? Where it's like one person trying to establish a business in themselves, and therefore free markets mostly closely resemble democracies. But that's actually not the truth. The truth is that they function within a very tight, very undemocratic framework. And that's what's frightening, because the increasing power of corporations mimic the powers that were classically held by the church. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of like why even... This is why we're talking about it right now, because even as we speak, the new religion, in a sense, is sort of like this revived no-hold-bars capitalism. And it's kind of a scary new development, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fairly recent. Okay, moving on to the next thing. This is more of an amusing note. Turns out that in Australia, you may not have heard of this, but this was on the James Randi's weekly newsletter. Turns out in Australia they've been having a bit of a drought. Well, okay. So the Prime Minister asked everybody to pray for some rain.
Is this Howard?
Yep, Howard, the bald dude,
yeah,
who looks like a clone of Dick Cheney.
He really does.
They look like they're lost twins or something. Anyways, so he asked for rain, there was a big drought, and then a couple of weeks ago, there was a huge flood in South Wales, and I guess he's kind of asking people to pray a little bit less. I'm not quite sure what the story here is. It's kind of an amusing thing there to ask individuals to pray for rain, don't you think?
It's, well, I don't know what the context of it was. If he was seriously saying we should pray for rain as like a viable plan, or if it was just something that he said in passing. So this is my issue, actually, with James. I'm going to take you a bit to task on this.
Okay, go ahead.
This is my issue a little bit with James Randi and those guys, is where they'll take something like this and they'll blow it up to be a big deal where it's just like a guy saying, oh, God willing, or this and that.
No, but even if you say it just in passing, saying like, well, you know, We should all pray for rain. Mm. Well, what's he doing saying that? That's, even if he was, even if that's tongue in cheek, I mean,
mm-hmm. not yeah, really. Even if it's just in passing, I don't know. I don't see it as that big of a deal. It's to me, it just seems a little bit like, you know, the Randys are once again pushing up against someone that isn't exactly resisting.
Oh, so it's an easy target, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a bit soft. I'm sure there are much worse things going on around the world in the name of religion and or things that need debunking than that. I mean, slow week or something?
You know, it could have been a slow week. Actually, in the, matter of fact, a couple of the newsletters have been a little thin, a little thin recently. I even tried to submit something, but they didn't post it up.
What'd you submit? One of your articles?
One of my articles, actually. The one on Peter Popoff.
Yeah.
I think we didn't actually talk about this on a radio show. I'm going to talk about this more in the next one, because it's still a really big issue and not a lot of people are aware of it, but I'll be going into it much later. But essentially, I guess you kind of ignored it. Maybe it wasn't big news. But going back to sort of like the Howard thing, I mean, it's just, I think that it's for comedic purposes. They say, look, I mean, you're praying, but maybe you should only pray, you know, 3 days a week because you're praying too much. I mean, that's the tongue-in-cheek part of it, saying like, well, you know, don't you think you're being a little bit silly asking for that? And I do think it's a bit silly.
No, it's definitely a bit silly. I guess when instead of saying this is an issue because of global warming and we should all do our best as Australians to try and fix the issue, rather than saying that, he just said, oh, let's pray.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, he's also a big neocon, right? And their refusal to really follow the guidelines of the Kyoto Protocol have a lot to do with their conservative attitude about business, about the economy, and so on and so forth. And Australia is a big producer of CO2. I mean, it's a really, really big one.
I'm always very surprised when I hear about this kind of stuff. My mother is Australian. I go down there. I've gone down there about 6 or 7 times over the course of my life, and it always surprised me. Everything seems very, very liberal and laid back, and they're very much for workers' rights, and they're very much for everything else. But then every so often, there's something like the environment or race issues where Australians just seem to fall flat on their face and they just do a terrible job.
Or with issues of like, women's rights and stuff like that. It's like fighting tooth and nail a lot of times. You know, there's a lot of chauvinism and...
Yeah, no, it's true. There's a lot of domestic abuse in Australia. Like a lot... It's above average. I think it's higher than the United States.
I think the only place that's actually higher is probably Russia.
What, for than the United States?
No, than
Australia.
Than Australia, yeah. Russia's pretty bad for that.
Yeah,
actually.
I can imagine.
But yeah, I mean, it does seem a little bit weird. And in that sense, I mean, like the whole praying or whatever is part of a general trend. I mean, even though this is not a big deal, it's just part of a general trend where people are like, you know, we need to pray and we need to kind of like have faith that these issues are going to be resolved somehow.
Yes. This is also something that the Bush administration did. And once again, I feel bad because in these podcasts, I tend to be a little bit of a Bush basher. But in general, in a general way, a lot of these administrations are saying you have to put faith in us that we're doing the right thing. And honestly, I'm thinking for administrations pretty much all around the world, they have used up their faith card. They can't say you have to trust us that we're going to do the right thing, because over and over and over, so many administrations in so many countries have proven that you shouldn't have to put faith. I mean, when you talk, you know the dictionary definition of faith, right?
Not offhand right now. You can,
but it basically has something
a belief held with no knowledge whatsoever.
Exactly, actually. And to say someone. To say to somebody, have faith in this, to me, is almost an insult. Why should I have faith in something? Present me with some kind of proof.
Right, no, exactly. Because, you know, that's kind of like that funny word that a lot of people throw around. They'll say, for instance, hey, you have faith in science, right? Because you believe in science. Well, I believe in the processes of science, and I look at the results, and I make up my mind. But that's not the same as faith. Faith is essentially you ignore the evidence that's right in front of your eyes, and you say, well, you know, it's got to be something else, or, you know, my president or my priest has told me that it's this way, so I'm just going to believe them, and I don't need any evidence whatsoever.
Well, the truth of the matter is, for me, I don't believe a lot of the science that's just being thrown out and about nowadays. I read things, and to me, it seems like a lot of the time, especially on some of the, that you have to pay more and more attention to who's doing the research and what their process is, and at this point, you can spin a study or you can spin research however you want it to say whatever you want to say. So now you can't just put your faith in, oh, because a scientific institution said something or because a scientific magazine said something, that it might actually be, say, true. Well, who was that Japanese guy who was, or the Koreans, they were doing a lot of cloning, and then it turned out that pretty much all of the work that they'd done turned out to be false.
Well, I think they were announcing the fact that they were planning on cloning a human, and that was just like a big load of, like a bunk. And you got to wonder, I mean, what their whole motivation behind making those statements. But back to sort of like your reference about studies and that kind of stuff. I mean, what we're dealing with is not necessarily like, these aren't scientific institutions that release the kind of studies that you're talking about that are really, you know, motivated by pure science alone. A lot of times these are, you know, pharmaceutical companies have an interest in it. That's one of the big ones. They're the ones that usually kind of will release something when it sounds interesting. And there's an interesting rationale to that. The idea is that if you kind of throw it out there and put it in scientific journals, then it can be disputed and debated. That's the whole idea. Yeah. So reading the one article and then basing your idea right after it is kind of silly, because you don't have the training to be very skeptical about it. That's why the peer review process takes a while. So it's only through time does something actually demonstrate as being either, well, this is an interesting result, or this was a really flawed methodology. So yeah, there's always somebody doing their homework, but the problem is we're not those people. We are not qualified to do it. So
and
we shouldn't just.
And the news media has proved itself to be a pretty miserable filter for what's true and what's not.
Well, scientific journalism has been kind of on a steady decline, and at least in terms of quality. I mean, any study that comes out being like, chocolate's good for you, chocolate's bad for you, and they'll just jump
this
on them because...
This causes cancer, that causes cancer. This might make your heart do better, and this will make it do worse. It's like, three glasses of wine are good. Three glasses of wine will raise your... Or this
three
that.
Glasses of wine will kill your children.
Make sure to eat eggplant every day to prevent rectal cancer.
The list goes on and on, undoubtedly. But you know what it is? For scientific journalism now, it's all about chasing that lead that's going to make people want to read it. And a lot of times they're either reinforcing ideas that you've already had, like, hey, chocolate turns out to be good for you, and you want to read that. Or sometimes it's actually kind of like throwing you in a loop saying, hey, beer's good for you now.
Well, this is definitely where I guess, I mean, looking at sites like news sites, MSNBC, CNN.com, where they will take the soundbite and they will throw it out there. But you'd imagine there should be a place on the internet where scientific, which is a bit more thorough, where you could actually get, you know, more accurate information that's not just the buzz and the hype.
Well, the big problem is that a lot of times when you're hearing that buzz and the hype, most of the scientific community has not even had the time to take a look at it. And a lot of times it's not even worthy of them looking at it, because they can just see it and say, this methodology is completely flawed. But because a lot of science is really kind of like one of those institutions that's a little insular, and not always willing to kind of make that effort to reach out to everybody else, well, then a lot of us think that their silence means that somehow they are agreeing with the findings. So if they don't say anything, then it has to be right.
It's ironic that science is falling behind on keeping up with technology to promote itself and its and what it's finding and so forth.
I won't lie about this, but there's definitely elitism that happens within the scientific world. And, you know, I miss guys like, say, Carl Sagan, who used to bridge that gap, you know, make science exciting and accessible to other people, and kind of bring scientists out and say, listen, guys, you know, you need to talk to these people. How else are you supposed to interest them to give you grants for research and all this other stuff? I mean, we've created such a huge divide, and there are very few people in the middle now. There are very few individuals that are trying to bridge that gap. And I think that's sad. I mean, we need 10 more, well, 100 more, 1,000 more Carl Sagans at this point right now.
You know who I think we need more of?
Oh, I want to know.
Bill Nye.
Is he still alive?
I don't know.
We need
actually.
Beekman.
No one really knew Beekman, man. Yeah, Beekman Beekman was considered a Bill Nye knockoff.
What?
Yeah.
Bill Nye bored me.
Bill Nye was a little bit dry.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. All right, on the final thing we're going to talk about is actually even more amusing than the praying. It's happening in China, where people are eating up dinosaur bones because they think that there is some medicinal qualities. They view dinosaur bones as essentially being flying dragons and well, you know, the obsession in China with dragons, and yeah. therefore they kind of grind up the bones and put it in potions and drink it up and that kind of stuff, and I guess they think it has healing properties. What do you think?
Well, I think first off, the majority of the people buying this aren't actually getting ground up dinosaur fossil or bone or whatever it might be. The second thing is that this is just another example, like on the long line of things that Chinese people do. Like they're well known for grind. You know, they're the main source of what tigers being killed.
Yeah. Well, plenty of endangered animals. See, they believe they have this
aphrodisiac qualities.
Well, they take a look at, they have this anthropomorphic view of organs. Like they'll say that, well, if you want sexual potency, eat ground up penis.
Yeah.
And somehow, you know, you're going to get the essence here. And it's kind of like this very, very simple animism kind of view of the universe, how essentially, like, you know, if a tree is strong and you eat bark, you too will be strong. I mean, it's ridiculous. We obviously recognize why that's ridiculous, but it doesn't stop it from being such an ingrained tradition that they don't even think about it.
It's an ingrained tradition, and because there's so many of them, it boggles my mind, the idea that there are endangered species of animals out there because there are people, so many people in China, in rural areas of China, that believe that eating the claws of a tiger will give them give them an erection. And I remember, actually,
we actually have medicine to do that, people.
No, but this is the interesting thing. I remember when Viagra was just coming out, and I was reading that there were wildlife people saying that this is a great thing because this is really going to save a lot of animals from being hunted down and killed. Because one of the main reasons that so many animals were going extinct, like tigers and elephants and so on and so forth, is because they were being killed to make aphrodisiacs in China.
And it's really funny, too, because there really are no aphrodisiacs other than, like, you know, Viagra, for instance, which is why it took so long to discover. I mean, the idea of aphrodisiacs, you know, for instance, there's a bunch of them. There's chocolate, there's strawberries, there's a countless. And they're all placebos, every single one of them.
Well, wasn't the idea was that chocolate and strawberries and so forth are mental... our mental...
You mean recreate the feelings
of
love and
euphoria? Shoot out a little bit of euphoria into your brain that might get you into a mood. It's a little bit of a push-off, and that was the general idea for it.
Well, I think there's...
While, on the other hand, like Viagra and everything actually just increases blood flow to the cock.
Well, you know, there's a couple different things. I've always believed, for instance, that... although I don't have any science to necessarily back me up. With the example of chocolate, most of the women that I've talked to have admitted that they don't really necessarily get that euphoria. It tastes great, and they love it, but it doesn't mimic any sort of anything close to an orgasm whatsoever.
I tell you, after I eat about 6 or 7 chocolate bars, I don't feel like doing nothing.
I'm not euphoric anymore.
No, exactly.
But I think on a greater part of also the appeal of Viagra, and this is what a lot of people don't understand, is that there is still a mental placebo effect that's happening when you have a pill, because you're preparing yourself. There's a high degree of expectation. And in anything that has a high degree of expectation, there will always be results. And this is the same for these aphrodisiacs, and this is the same for the Chinese bones from dinosaurs, so on and so forth. I mean, they have such a high degree of expectations just that something is bound to happen. And they use that as justification to continue using it, because the effect that was based on this perception is a self-reinforcing prophecy. And that is the real shame with it, because you're not going to be able to convince someone saying, well, that doesn't work, because they'll be like, well, it worked for me.
Yeah.
And no matter how much sense you try to talk into them, they don't want to admit that it doesn't possibly work, because now they've negated that effect. They've negated the benefits from this made-up effect.
Wasn't there some movie where the kid had a magic glove and he was great, and then it turned out that the glove wasn't magic anymore, and then he went out and won the World Series?
Oh my God, no.
We should make that movie.
I think they've already made like 10 movies like that.
Yeah.
It's the most cliched, boring movie ever.
Well, just replace the boy with Chinese people and a magic baseball glove with a ground-up tiger penis.
Here's what's funny about the dinosaur bones. Now... I don't know if they know this, but you know, there are no dino bones left. I mean, this is petrified rock. Okay, you're not going to find any traces of bone in here. You kind of got to wonder if they're even aware of that. Like, you want to eat ground up granite? Fine. Okay, I will send you tons of the stuff. Just stop grinding up precious bones. I mean, who knows? Maybe somebody ground up a bone that would be. Help us understand kind of like part of that missing link between, you know, birds and dinos. There's still a lot of debate going on. We're still looking for more transitional fossils and stuff. But,
you know, here is a little bit of a good atheist podcast homework assignment to look up Chinese, like the Chinese involvement in finding dinosaur bones and exploring. I'd be interested because they got so much, they cover so much of the planet that I'd really like to know what kind of dinosaurs there are out there. And if there actually are people out there actually doing studies out there and seeing if there are other...
Well, there definitely are. I mean, there's plenty of universities in China that that look into that stuff. Mm-hmm. And China's a really rich deposit for dinosaur bones.
Yeah.
The only problem is that they have a lot of mountainous regions that are really difficult to access. I mean, yeah. It's not unlike the Burgess Shale that's in British Columbia. I mean, that was... The advantage of that is because it's really old rock, and that's why they were able to see all the different layers of life. And actually, Canada is famous for that because it was one of the first prime examples of the different stratas of life and how it evolved and stuff like that. That's right there in Canada. So they have similar landscapes with us. So mm-hmm. obviously they've got quite a bit, but you know, China's a difficult place to get all of the information.
Yeah.
Because the information is very, very, very carefully filtered.
Yeah.
So we don't know what kind of crazy stuff might be happening over there.
Yeah.
We definitely know that there's a lot of science, and you know, China's advancing that way, and that's really exciting. But there's this weird mix, and the mix is always there, kind of changing and almost, you know, keeping them back a little with this traditionalism that seems to haunt them every once in a while, where everybody's like, well, what are the medicinal qualities of these dinosaur bones? None. There are none. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
well, that's hilarious. All right, well, that's the end of the show. We're going to wrap it up nice and tight. It is a holiday after all. Well, it's not a holiday for us, but we can take the day off.
It's a holiday for me now. I'm off on my vacation now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're on vacation, right?
Yes, sir.
Wow. And what are you going to do on your vacation? You're going to set up a home gym?
I'm going to edit this podcast.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and past that, I'm going to eat lots of food with my family.
And, well, just to try to avoid dino bones.
But I need them to make sweet love.